Giancarlo Stanton out 4 to 6 weeks, and much more from the weekend. In fact, good stuff from the weekend, too, not just the bad stuff. Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, June 29th. We are done with 12 weeks of fantasy baseball, and guess what? There are only two teams in the podcast league with a record better than 6-6. Have you ever seen such a thing?
I've never seen such a thing in all my years, Adam.
This is parody.
Yes, we love it. We love it. Everybody's in contention. Good stuff. Al Melchior, Scott White, how were your weekends? Scott, how was Al's weekend? And Al, tell me about Scott's weekend.
Al's weekend, I'm going to guess, was satisfactory. And maybe even a little on the good side.
Did he go horseback riding?
He nailed it.
Did he go horseback riding, Scott?
Yes. No. No.
But somebody has been checking Facebook, huh?
No, I haven't. I just guessed.
Oh, because I posted a picture of our horse.
Oh, okay.
But he was not ridden.
And what did Scott do this weekend?
Well, see, I did check Facebook, so I know there was some sort of ceremony.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to guess that you had a good weekend.
Yeah, it was good. It's a good weekend. Baby dedication ceremony.
Oh, nice.
Church. Yes.
Well, people want to know about Giancarlo Stanton, Colin McHugh, and Steven Matz, and guys like that. So we're going to tell them as we welcome you to another Monday show. Jam-packed, action-packed. We'll talk DFS. We'll take your emails. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Please watch Daily Fantasy Live, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. You will enjoy it on CBSSports.com to help you set your FanDuel lineups. Talk about the most added, most dropped, who we added, Fernando Rodney updates, weekend standouts, and more. Let's start with the tweet of the day. Tweet of the day is from Josh Cavazos. He says, dudes, is there buy low potential for Giancarlo Stanton? Do you expect a bounce back from this?
Hey, guy. buy low potential.
I think there's definitely bounce back potential, but yeah, I think there is a buy low opportunity because I'm on the other side of that in some leagues, and I have given thought to selling off Stanton for help that I need right now.
Oh man, you have to be 6-6 to do that.
Yeah.
I guess there is. I mean, I wouldn't want to sell him if I owned him, but.
Well, look, if you're struggling right now, 5-7, 6-6, something like that, and you're missing your best player for 4 to 6 weeks, I think you probably should sell him.
No.
I don't know that I'm going to. I just said
I'd. What do you mean, no, come on?
We're not quite halfway through the season.
Yeah, but no. We are. If the playoffs start in week 21, you know, if you're in a roto league, it's one thing. But if you're in a head-to-head and your playoffs start around week 21 or something, you are pretty close to the playoffs at this point, and you need to win some games.
Right, but if you're in a head-to-head league, also, it's three outfielders, and
not necessarily
probably have some you've been trying to get in your lineup and couldn't, and they could very well perform well until Stanton returns. I guess I could understand, like, maybe not 6-6, but if you're like 4-8, and
yeah,
but at the same time, you wouldn't want to do anything that's going to compromise the integrity of the league.
No. I mean, let's just say, give me an outfielder. Would you trade Stanton for Cespedes right now if you were 6-6?
Oh no, that's crazy talk.
I don't think it is.
How about Stanton for like Puig?
That's
I would probably do that.
That's more like it.
And on that subject, you heard what you probably saw what Don Mattingly said about Yasiel Puig. And Don Mattingly is kind of frank, I think. If you bother him, he says it. And he seems to be frustrated with Puig's approach, and he says that Yasiel Puig has to adjust to pitchers and kind of hinted that sometimes he just doesn't really go up there with a plan. So is that something that concerns you with Yasiel Puig? Because it just seems like since his rookie year, he was really good last year. He has been bad this year, but he has not quite reached his potential.
Well, he's missed so much time. I don't know that it's fair to judge his performance this season. I feel like when he's been healthy, he's been nothing to complain about.
Nothing to complain about, but he hasn't quite reached end of first round, beginning of second round production.
He has 110 at-bats this year and a near 900 OPS. I don't know. I can't. His OPS is better than last year's.
Well, you and I are just not seeing eye to eye today, Scott.
Well, I guess not. you're all complainy today.
Well, Don Mattingly said it about Yaz. I didn't say it about
Puig. He's kind of complainy, too.
Mattingly?
Yeah.
Curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Curmudgeonly Mattingly.
Must be a New York thing. Okay, moving on. Mats for bats. Keep bats warm.
Caveman talk.
No, that's my horrible Pedro Serrano. Mats for bats. Keep bats warm. Anyway, we'll talk about Mats and some other prospects. Steven Mats made his major league debut yesterday. Gave up a leadoff home run. I dropped him in every league. And then I picked him back up after 7 2/3, 5 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts, 2 solo shots allowed against the Reds yesterday. Pretty good. And 4 RBI. The first Mets player to have 4 RBI in his first game with
the team.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. And he's a pitcher.
I was going to say, like, first Mets player to have 4 RBI this season.
It seems that way. Okay, he's 80% owned. Your thoughts on Steven Matz? And you know what? I'll get in a lot of questions. Should I start Matz this week at the Dodgers?
Yes, I think you should. If he were a righty, I might have slight hesitation. But the Dodgers just aren't that good against lefties. And he clearly is a very good one.
And he is left-handed. I can confirm this. Do we have anything else to say about Steven Matz?
No, I don't guess so. I mean, I think everybody, he was so widely stashed when he got called up. I think everybody kind of had an idea what to expect.
All right. Matt Boyd is, 6% owned. He made his major league debut. He's a Blue Jays pitcher.
Also left-handed.
Yeah. Gave up 4 runs on 9 hits with no walks, 7 strikeouts, 3 home runs allowed against Texas. Wasn't really that bad of a start, just from my perspective.
No. I mean, 3 home runs is kind of alarming.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is just 1 start. So, this is a guy I've been high on for a while now. One of those I like to think of as my own personal discoveries because I hadn't heard of him until I looked up, I found him. I saw him in the minors among the league leaders and said, hey, I need to read more about this guy and was intrigued by what I read. So, 1.26 ERA between 2 stops.
That boy.
0.81 whip, nearly a strikeout per inning. Just kind of reminds me of, like Alex Wood, a left-hander with kind of deceptive delivery, who nobody, the scouts weren't really that high on when he was drafted but he just kept dominating the minor leagues and made it to the majors and pitched well there too. And we got obviously have to see Boyd take that last step. But they kind of have some parallels there.
Well,
except
he's 6% owned.
Matt Boyd throws 95 miles per hour. So
yeah, he does. He's obviously got good stuff. But I know you added him, Scott, in one league. Should Matt Boyd be owned in more leagues? Is this guy a guy who should going to be on the most added list pretty soon? And we got to beat the rush.
Well, 6% means he's not even owned in some AL leagues, which AL only leagues, which is ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's must own in mixed leagues or anything like that. But if you have a roster spot to play with, it can't hurt.
Matt Boyd or Vince Velasquez?
I'm gonna lean Velasquez there still. Because I think he's there's more people on to him and probably higher upside.
At this point, I would go Boyd just because I'm not really liking what I've seen from Velasquez so far, and maybe there's something there for Boyd. Ultimately, he might not do any better, but I'd be more willing to give him a shot now.
Raise your hand and then tell me if you raised it. If you are excited about Rougned Odor, I'm raising my hand.
I raised it before you said what we're raising.
Yeah, because you just told us to raise our hands.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
But I kept mine raised.
But yeah, me too.
No, yeah, Rougned Odor, 41% owned. And he's batting .395 with 2 home runs and 4 steals in 38 at-bats since being called up. He's playing very well. 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. Yeah, thrilling stuff right now from Rougned Odor. Who's pumped?
I am, and he has now started 6 games in a row.
Yeah, there was some concern about that. I think his home run Saturday was off a lefty, too, which
it was off Boyd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Should help him stay in the lineup.
So, drop Neil Walker for Rougned Odor.
Yes, please.
I still can't go there. I would drop, Alexi Ramirez. I'm thinking of middle infield options I don't like on my roto teams.
Brock Holt. or Rougned Odor?
Odor.
No, I got to go Brock Holt still. You know what? It may be points leagues Holt and Roto Odor.
Robinson Cano.
Come
on. Or Odor. Robinson Cano is
sporting. I would bench Cano for Odor right now.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Robinson Cano sporting the catcher's mask in the dugout yesterday. Did you see that?
I did not.
So he got hit by a throw from the infielders were warming up for the Angels, hit him in the head on Saturday. On Sunday, he's wearing a catcher's mask in the dugout while the Angels were warming up.
Can't be too safe.
Quite hilarious. And final prospect to talk about here, Jonathan Singleton called up. Apparently could take away playing time from Evan Gattis and Chris Carter.
Well, the only game Singleton started over the weekend, all three of them were in the lineup. Gattis played left field.
Yeah, Colby Rasmus has been out a couple of days. That's just, these are the words of their manager, I believe. But yeah,
doesn't seem like they're that motivated to play Singleton at all. So.
Which makes it a very weird call-up. You know why? I
think it's probably temporary.
Maybe it's just trying to light a fire under Carter. And I mean, I didn't think Gattis, I know his batting average is pretty low, but he's driving in a lot of runs. By the way, Chris Carter, quick peek ahead to DFS. 3-for-8 against Joe Blanton. All three of those hits are home runs.
So, that's true of a lot of people, though, I think.
Not this year. Joe Blanton.
Not this year.
So I can't wait for FanDuel tonight. I've got the winning lineup. I will tell all of you about it later. But you need to get on FanDuel.com right now. FANDUEL. FanDuel.com. You can watch DFS, so DF Live. I always call it DFS Live. DF Live, Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. Eastern to 7 p.m. Eastern every Monday through Friday on CBSSports.com. We'll help you with your lineup. And if you go to FanDuel and click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, enter our offer code CBSPOD. CBSPOD, you're going to get your first deposit up to $200 matched dollar for dollar by FanDuel. It gets earned as you play CBSPOD. Get there right now. Start playing FanDuel. I will help you win tonight. I guarantee victory. I'm super
How
excited.
Can you possibly feel comfortable with your lineup tonight?
Because
the best pitcher going, and by best I mean highest salaries, Clay Buchholz.
If you guys help me with my starting pitcher, I feel very good about my lineup, put it that way.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you don't have a good start from your starting pitcher.
Tonight might be a night where you can get away with it.
Hard.
I'm going Lance McCullers tonight against the Royals, who might be down Eric Hosmer and might be down Alcides Escobar. And McCullers, I think, and they don't walk either. The Royals have the fewest walks in baseball.
Also, don't strike out.
I know, but they have struck out. I mean, they've had games where they've struck out a lot. And
going with an unproven, unreliable pitcher against one of the worst matchups in baseball.
Yeah,
I disagree that they're the worst matchup.
I know this is in our DFS segment, but I kind of like two pitchers tonight, and neither one is McCullers.
Okay, good. We'll look forward to hearing about that later. Let's go over some of the news from over the weekend. Lloyd McClendon wants Fernando Rodney to regain the closer's role. And Rodney's actually pitched pretty well, and he got a save over the weekend. Carson Smith
worked earlier in that game.
Yeah, the reason given for that by McClendon was that the Angels had their best hitters up in the eighth, and he wanted Smith for those batters.
Oh, now he's this forward-thinking manager, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
Mr. Saber.
Obviously a situation worth watching. Josh Hamilton could be back today for the Rangers. The Yankees have not made a decision yet on who will leave the rotation and go to the bullpen. Should be coming soon. Jake Odorizzi is going to begin a rehab assignment Thursday. Matt Moore is probably going to pitch Thursday. As Matt Andrees was sent to AAA. Yeah, Matt Moore time. Start or sit, Matt Moore?
Sit.
I would sit him.
But own him.
Williams Perez on the DL with a foot contusion. Do you think he's worth hanging on to?
No. NL only, that's it.
Hanley Ramirez. Now, okay, obviously if he's in the lineup, you're going to start him. If he's not in the lineup tonight, maybe we'll know by then. He could go to the DL. It's bottom line. Got to be careful with Ramirez. He was sent back to Boston for an MRI. Jacoby Ellsbury going to begin a rehab assignment today. He could be back late this week. Feel okay starting Adam Jones? He started one of the two games of the doubleheader yesterday.
Yeah, I'd start Jones.
All right, Eric Hosmer day-to-day sprained finger. Alcides Escobar cracked fingernail but could play today. And the home run derby is going to be timed. They've changed the format. It's about time.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the format?
All right, here's what they're going to do. They've got eight participants. This is how I think it's going down. Eight participants, and they're put together into four brackets of two. And it's a 5-minute timed session. And you just try to advance, basically. You start playing like from the quarterfinals on, right? With eight participants and one person in the 2-man bracket advances.
So you just keep hitting until the time's up?
Yes.
It's like that hoops game at the state fair where you put the quarter in and you try to get as many baskets and
yes, pop a shot with home runs.
So you don't want Mark Burley as your pitcher.
Exactly. I there are some stoppages in time. I think something like you hit a home run under a minute, the clock stops until you make an out. I don't remember. It's something like that, but it is a different format.
Some complications that sound unnecessary.
It should be better than the endless...
Oh, yeah, it's a bore. It's a total bore.
Yeah, completely.
Especially without Stanton now. Come on. Who's watching that?
Yeah, it's a crusher.
I wonder if Stanton did participate, how many he would hit.
Yeah, it never quite works out the way you think, you know?
What's that?
Never quite works out the way you think.
Well, he was saying with the broken hand.
Yeah. Oh, with the broken hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of makes it fair, I think.
Yeah, he'd hit 8 to 10.
But your point is true too, Adam.
Yeah, it's a little unpredictable. Who'd you guys add and drop this week? Anything major?
Matt Boyd. No, just in one league. I did that. I was actually trying to corner the Blue Jays closer situation. I kept picking up both Roberto Osuna and Steve Delabar in at least in roto leagues. And hopefully there's a little more clarity about that situation now. I think it was Saturday or was it Sunday? I think it was Sunday actually.
Osuna got the save Saturday.
Oh, Saturday.
Oh, no, Sunday.
Yeah, Delabar,
Sunday.
Not only
did
Osuna get the save, Delabar entered to begin the eighth, got the first two outs, and then Osuna came in and got the last four outs of the game for the save. So they both worked in the game, and kind of the opposite of what John Gibbons said he'd do, maybe not the opposite, but he was talking about how he wanted to preserve Osuna, didn't want to save Osuna for the ninth because he wanted to have him available earlier in the game if need be. I don't know that this confirms that Osuna is the guy, but at least it points the arrow back in his direction.
Yeah, that was on Sunday, Scott. You were right. All right, Al, any interesting ad drops for you?
I did in our podcast league add Mitch Moreland.
Yeah.
Will be my utility guy for this week. Like him a lot. We've talked about how he's having a really great season, and I think it's legit, but still, because of first base, it's really hard to get him onto a particularly a roster like the podcast league, which is a three outfielder league, no corner infield spot, but I liked it better than the options I had for utility. So picked him up there. I also picked up, Andrew Heaney in that league, in 15 team mixed Tout Wars. I picked up Chris Young as my Stanton replacement. That's obviously, a slight downgrade.
Yeah, well, not against lefties.
Yeah. That was mostly it.
Yeah, okay. Now, look, if you look at the most added list on CBSSports.com, the number one most added player is Mike Montgomery. He's a two-star guy. The number two is Marco Estrada. He's a two-star guy. So I think that means it wasn't a weekend of, oh my gosh, I have to pick this player up. That said, I think Rougned Odor might be underowned at 41%. I added him in a league. And Jimmy Paredes is reminding me a little bit of Steve Pierce from last year in that he was so hot and you had to buy in because it was lasting so long. And then he got extremely cold and people dropped him. And now in Paredes's last 9 games, he's batting .438 with 3 home runs. Before that, he had batted .170 with no extra base hits over 14 games. I heard something interesting on the Orioles broadcast yesterday. They were talking about how he had gotten so hot that he was just swinging at everything. And he lost his plate discipline. And actually, he drew 3 walks in the last 2 games. And those were the first 2 walks, or first 3 walks that Paredes had earned in June. He had no walks in June until Saturday. So maybe he's being a little bit more selective at the plate now, starting to turn things around. He's 64% owned. I added him in a roto league.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't like the lack of walks from the beginning, but it's clear there's some kind of turnaround happening here. So I was disappointed when I saw you pick him up in the Memorial Magazine League, because I know I dropped him in that league. I was one of those who fell into the Steve Pierce trap again.
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't remember, I don't know if you remember, but I cursed you out for picking
up. You cursed me out?
You outbid me by $1 for Paredes like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember the cursing out. I remember you telling me that you did, though.
Yeah, that's, I didn't curse you out to you. I did it.
So unfair.
Behind your back. Well, the tables have turned now, haven't they? So,
yeah, I was just a little disappointed. I wasn't cursing you out. Well, I mean, come on, it's just fantasy baseball.
More polite person than I am. Okay, to the most added and most dropped list. Mike Montgomery is the most added player. Marco Estrada, number two, as mentioned. Kendall Graveman's number four. And those are three of the top four. Justin Turner is three. And Chris Young, as Al mentioned, Chris Young is number five. Keep in mind, he really only does it against lefties. Kind of stinks against righties and, you know.
Yes.
Keep that
yes,
in mind.
Yes, indeed.
you have anything to say about those five guys? Montgomery, Estrada, Turner, Graveman, Young.
Well, Montgomery and Graveman are, and Estrada. All three are two-star pitchers, so not too surprising to see him on here. And I think all three are good to start in most formats this week. I would say, you know, at least as far as 12-team mix and deeper. I think Montgomery, maybe just because he's the least known quantity, is the biggest risk. But, you know, I think Estrada, and Scott, I think, has mentioned the relative lack of strikeouts for Estrada. That makes him less desirable in a one-start week, but in a two-start week, I think he should give you a nice score this week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to picking him up. If ten strikeouts last time is kind of a return to form for him, that'd be great. I think we need to talk about Justin Turner, though, because he had a monster week. 5 home runs in his last 9 games. And before I was concerned about the lack of playing time, he started 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Well, I guess he started 8 of the last 10, so still not quite every day, but close enough. I mean,
yeah,
his numbers are going up, not down, which is surprising to me.
And I got a bunch of pitchers here that I want you guys to talk about long-term. So forget this week, but who are your favorites in this list? Montgomery, Estrada, Graveman, Leake, Ivan Nova, Andrew Heaney.
Well, Estrada's my favorite, but I'm actually most intrigued at this point by Mike Leake.
Wow.
I've spent years dismissing, and even on Friday when we were talking about two-star pitchers, I said, yeah, he's had a really good month of June, but we've seen him be good for, you know, weeks of the stretch, and he always goes back to being like a 3.9 ERA guy who doesn't strike anybody out. The strikeouts have been up lately. I mean, not to a high level, but a better level. And going to Brooks Baseball, since late May, he's been throwing his cutter about 92 miles an hour, which is between 1 and 2 miles an hour harder than he's thrown it for most of his career. And it's the hardest he's thrown it in his career. And he's been doing this consistently now since the end of May. So I think it's interesting. And the advice I gave in the pitching column was, because it's not that big of a sample, there's some really good two-start options this week. Don't start Leake. But if you have room, pick him up and stash him and see if he does well over these next two starts, because then he'd be somebody you'd want to use, you know, quite often.
Yeah. Anyone else on that list? Ivan Nova?
I can't get excited about Nova. I remember him being better than he was when I went back and looked at the numbers. Like, the ERA was good in 2013 when he was last healthy, but that was kind of it, and you need more than that to stand out these days.
Matt Duffy is standing out. He's a hitter. He's not a pitcher, but the
he is.
Young San Francisco Giants third baseman is hitting very well. Had the numbers. Oh, there they are. .303 batting average. In June, he's batting .326 with 5 home runs and 6 doubles. 53% owned Matt Duffy or Rougned Odor.
Rougned.
Yeah, Rougned. But Duffy is impressing me. This is more power than I expected to have. He's on pace for 17 homers now. It's kind of the NL version of Jimmy Paredes, I feel like.
Who do you
doesn't
like
walk a lot, but just keeps getting hits and enough power there that he can make do with. He doesn't really need the walks to make an impact in fantasy.
Duffy is second base and third base eligible. Who do you like better, Duffy or Paredes?
I like Paredes a little better.
Yeah, a little better.
Let's talk about some weekend standouts, guys. Who'd you got? Or who'd you got? Who you got?
Who'd you got?
I got Curtis Granderson, who is also having surprising power given the kind of the trajectory he's been on the last few years. And I talked about picking up Moreland in our podcast league. It was really kind of a struggle for me to decide whether I should pick up him or Granderson. And I think somebody else in the league actually picked up Granderson. But, you know, he's back to hitting for power, not drawing quite as many walks, but I think that's a trade-off I can live with.
Yeah, and, did you see what Terry Collins said about him?
No, I didn't.
He said, he hits home runs in clumps, which is true.
It's true. It's been true. But it's, I mean, what's going on with him this year is very different because he really, for the first about month and a half of the season, was a completely different type of hitter and one that might have made him more valuable in real life, but definitely did not make him more valuable in fantasy with all the walks and the relative lack of power and the all fields hitting, which is pretty uncharacteristic for Granderson. But he's gone back more to his old ways, and I think that makes him viable in most mixed leagues now.
Okay. Granderson's 86% owned, and yeah, he's red hot right now. More standouts? I pretty much got everyone covered in the notes that we've done, just fly through it.
There's a deep league guy that's sort of intriguing. I've seen him picked up in some leagues over the weekend. Cesar Hernandez, who, you know, will now likely get more playing time with Chase Utley out.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's still, I want to say, three bases in the last two games.
I think that's right, yeah.
So, I mean, he's a deep league guy, but,
Al Melke, you are a champion of the deep leagues.
Somebody's got to be, right?
I love it. No, it's good stuff. I overlook that stuff all the time, so I appreciate that. Alejandro de Haza, anybody buying into him? Speaking of deep leagues, he's batting .288 with three home runs all in his last four games with Boston.
He's got to be just one of the most sort of frustrating and puzzling players because – I mean, there have been stretches where he's been really good in providing power and speed, but then there have also been very long stretches where he really doesn't provide anything. So he's clearly got the potential to be useful in a Ceramics Roto League, but I guess just because of the inconsistency, I haven't really made a move for him.
Okay, that's Alejandro de Haza. Matt Kemp is 7-for-20 with two home runs as a leadoff hitter, so that's cool. Nolan Arenado has now 15 of his 24 home runs on the road after homering twice Sunday at the Giants. Todd Frazier's the only third baseman who's been better than Arenado in fantasy so far, and Arenado is slugging .686 on the road. That's pretty awesome. Here are some injuries news and notes. Jorge De La Rosa expected to make his next start. Justin Verlander will start Tuesday. Matt Cain should be back this week. Tim Lincecum is hurt. So, would you rather have Kane or like the Gravemans, Novas, Estradas, Montgomerys? Where would he fit in with that group?
I'd put him sort of in the middle. I'd rather have Estrada than Kane. Actually, I might. That's Estrada's the only one I clearly prefer to Kane.
Okay. Yeah. What's going to happen in the Giants' rotation? Lincecum, it might not be a long-term thing. Peavy's going to be coming back soon. Is there any chance Chris Heston loses his role?
Well, I mean, Lincecum's going to be out. I think that's safe to say. And didn't I see?
Well, I mean, Vogelsong, well, I think would be gone well before Heston.
Oh yeah, yeah. So that's true.
He should be. I think Heston should be safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Danny Santana's back. Everybody, do you care?
No.
Okay. Yordano Ventura needs at least one more rehab start before he rejoins the Royals' rotation. Brett Oberholzer had a terrible day on Saturday. He gave up 6 runs in like 1 1/3, and then he threw at A-Rod. He got ejected. He threw his glove into the dugout wall. He went crazy, and then he got demoted the next day. Yeah, it was ugly.
It was a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
He's in AAA. Daniel Murphy could come off the DL Tuesday. Seal Shiwada's on the DL, and Jaime Garcia expected to make his Thursday start.
You kind of blew past that Jorge De La Rosa news, but it's significant.
De La Rosa, yeah. De La Rosa.
That's right. Sets up De La Rosa versus De La Rosa 2.
Rising
of the Rockies.
Rising of the Rockies.
Can we call this the War of the Roses?
We can.
I like that. Because, you know, Rosa means rose, right?
Oh, well, now that you've explained it, yeah.
George of the Rose. And then Ruby of the Rose.
The Ruby of the Rose is a better ring to it. Let's talk about some of the pitching performances from over the weekend. Studs being studs. There were a lot of really good pitching performances. I'm defining studs as owned in 80% of leagues or more. But the first group of studs being studs, these are guys that you drafted thinking they could or would or should be studs. And they had great performances. Alex Wood. He was amazing. 8 strikeouts, no walks, no runs, over 7 1/3 at Pittsburgh. Jeff Samardzija, now the final line doesn't look great. He gave up 4 runs in 7 1/3. He had 7 scoreless innings before he got touched up in the 8th. And he's gone over 7 innings or more in 4 straight starts. He's been pretty good. Colin McHugh dazzled, if I may say so, against the Yankees. 2 hits, 2 walks, 1 run, 8 strikeouts in 8 innings. Michael Pineda had a nice bounce back at Houston. Tyson Ross walked 5 guys, but that's now 3 earned runs in 15 innings over his last 2 starts. And Garrett Richards has been pretty good since he got destroyed in less than an inning at the Yankees. Last 4 starts, 7 earned runs and 27 2/3 for Garrett Richards. Wood, Samardzija, McHugh, Pineda, Ross, Richards. Anything to say here?
Well, this was the most encouraging start yet for McHugh, I think, because the previous start, he went 8 innings also, but 9 hits, and there were still 6 strikeouts in 8 innings is not the Colin McHugh you thought you were getting. But this was 8-8 with only 2 hits, and it is just 1 start. But I kind of feel like McHugh and Alex Wood both are at least inching in the right direction. They're still not where you want them to be, but there's enough encouraging signs that you're kind of just holding on to them and hoping for better.
Not a great start from Samardzija, but I feel like this has been probably the most consistent phase of his season so far. I think he's back to being a guy you'd start most weeks.
Studs being studs part 2. Gets a little bit more interesting here. These guys are not guys you necessarily drafted expecting them to be studs, but they've been pretty darn good. And Hector Santiago has a 2.58 ERA, people, and almost a strikeout per inning. Yeah.
I know. It's
now,
nuts.
2 straight quality starts for Santiago, but this comes after 4 straight non-quality starts earlier this month.
Mostly because of innings, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is still important, but just pointing it out.
Yovani Gallardo is pitching great. He had an 8 1/3 scoreless innings on Saturday, and in the 6 starts before that, he had a 1.22 ERA. Ubaldo Jimenez, one of the best starts of the weekend. 8 innings, 4 hits, no runs, no walks, 7 strikeouts. He has a 3.09 ERA. And Taijuan Walker has just been ridiculous lately. Last 6 starts, he's 5-1 with a 1.91 ERA.
Yeah, Walker, I just would start in any format now without any sort of reservation. He has arrived. Santiago, you know, pretty sure we've talked about before, and I think Scott and I maybe have talked about him on video, where you know, we've talked about his pretty extreme fly ball tendencies and how those should play well at Angel Stadium. But looking at his numbers over the weekend, I actually think the more important splits for him are lefty-righty, because he gives up a lot of home runs pretty much everywhere, but he is amazing against lefties and not very good against righties. So I think you got to look at the lineup he's facing. And, you know, if it's a good righty heavy lineup like the Tigers, probably not good to start Santiago, but I think it gets a lot of teams. He's going to be very good.
Who's buying into Gallardo or Jimenez?
Well, Jimenez, the timing of this couldn't be worse, because I just decided on Saturday was my heavy waiver day this week, and all the leagues where I owned Jimenez, I was like, I think it's safe to cut him loose at this point. He's not even going 6 innings consistently. The hits are kind of high. The walks aren't bad, but just not as good as, you know, he was really depending on those early numbers. Those were kind of what was keeping him on my roster, and he hadn't been that great recently. And then he comes back with a start like this, and it's like, oh, I shouldn't have dropped him. I don't know that I don't know that I trust Jimenez still to be this mainstay in fantasy. This segment's called Studs Being Studs Part 2. I don't think of any of these guys as studs, except maybe Walker's.
Yeah, right. That's why it's really an ownership percentage thing.
Right. But Jimenez and Gallardo both, I think...
You selling them?
At least show they're worth owning.
But you would take... I mean, if you could sell those guys based on their season-to-date performances...
I mean, it's. I guess it's a good time just to sell Jimenez. That's a good point. And Gallardo too. I mean, they both have some name value backing up their recent performance. But because the underlying stats, in Gallardo's case, the strikeout rate, you mentioned it was pretty good over his last six starts, but there was a 10 strikeout game in there that I think elevates it.
Yeah.
Overall, he's not the Gallardo he was for most of his Brewers career.
One thing I wanted to say about Jimenez, though, just to go back to that. So if you looked at what happened to the Indians yesterday, they played a doubleheader with the Orioles. They had two pathetic games. Chris Tillman had a great start against them in the nightcap. And after the game, Brandon Moss called his team out. Terry Francona was like, we had terrible at-bats. We didn't grind at all. So I don't want to take too much away from Jimenez. He did a great job, but he and Tillman might have caught the Indians on a good day to pitch against them, I guess.
It would appear so, yeah.
Kind of what I'm saying. All right, struggling studs now. I only got two guys, and you did draft them to be studs, and they were bad this weekend. First, let me read a tweet. It's from Mentz. Do I give up on Julio Teheran in a 14-team head-to-head non-dynasty league? 14-team league, do you give up on Julio Teheran?
He's got to throw a one-hitter next time out. Come on.
It's his home road splits are incredible. He's got a 740 ERA on the road. And a 2.35 ERA at home. And last year, they weren't quite that different, but there was a big difference in home road splits for Teheran last year, too.
Yeah, not really sure what to make about that. Maybe we need to find out what his pregame ritual is. You know, maybe he like goes to the Varsity or something for lunch and you know, need to find him a good restaurant in other cities. I don't know. all I know is in a 14-team league, there's no way I'm dropping Teheran. I might consider it in like a shallow 12-team league, but I probably wouldn't even do it there, to be honest, because like Scott said, he's just too good, has been too good in the past to think that he can't just have a really great second half.
And he has these brilliant starts, like, peppered into this. It's so annoying to everybody. Yeah. Even Freddy Gonzalez is annoyed. He's like, we got to figure out what's going on here, because every time he has a great start, it's like, all right, we got him back on track, and then... he follows it up with something like this and doesn't make any sense.
And Masahiro Tanaka gave up three more home runs, and that is six home runs in his last two starts. This one was at Houston, and it was a better start than the one against Detroit, but you wouldn't know it just by looking at the box score. So any concerns about Tanaka, who was absolutely ridiculously awesome in the three starts prior to this little two-start slump?
If this were any other pitcher of his caliber, I would be really dismissing this because how many great pitchers have we seen have back-to-back stinkers already this year? It seems like they've all gone through that.
Mm-hmm.
But because of, you know, Tanaka's elbow, you know, forearm. Thank you.
Both. I mean,
okay.
The elbow's still.
Yeah,
there's that question, but
yeah.
I also think it's fair to ask, you know, you said any other pitcher of this caliber. I'm not sure it's totally clear what caliber pitcher Tanaka is. Because he didn't have surgery on the elbow until he does, assuming he ever does, that's going to be a question, just how much is it impacting his performance. But at the same time, we had half an ace caliber season from him, and we're assuming that's who he is when, you know, Hideo Nomo looked like one of the best pitchers in baseball for half a season, too. And then after that, he was kind of middle of the road rest of his career.
You know, the one thing I hadn't checked and I'm checking now is the velocity trend for him. And the two previous starts, he was in the upper 92 range. And then he was 91 to 92 in these last two starts. Again, any other pitcher, I might say, yeah, it's just one of those things. But, you know, with Tanaka, I'm sort of have my yeah, my tentacles out for looking for any kind of sign that he might not be healthy.
Are you an alien?
Yeah. No, you are, Al.
Are you a Kraken?
Can't spell alien without Al.
No, you can't. That's a good point.
That's never been pointed out before.
Let's talk fringy starting pitchers now. Moving on. Part one. These guys are 65 to 79% owned. Who are your two favorites? Drew Hutchison, Jose Quintana, Andrew Cashner, Nick Martinez, Wei-Yin Chen.
Andrew Cashner and Jose Quintana. And in both cases, it amazes me that they're owned on the same level as the other three pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
They are. I like both of them better than any of those studs being studs part two, except for Taijuan Walker.
Yeah.
So better than Santiago, better than Gallardo, better than Ubaldo Jimenez. I don't know why. I understand why Cashner, I guess, because he's just won his third game. His win-loss record is terrible. But he's pitched very well for the most part. And then in Quintana's case, yeah, I just feel like so many of his starts are... Oh, he's 3-7, so I guess it's a win-loss record thing for both of you. Come on, people. What year is this?
Well,
win-loss record? Are you really using it as well, a future performance?
I get it with both of them because when Cashner's been bad, he's been so bad. And Quintana, he's much steadier, but it's very rare that he does something that really, you know, really makes you go, wow. But I completely agree with Scott that they're really at a different class than, you know, these pitchers and a lot of the other pitchers we've talked about.
Fringy starting pitchers part two, 50 to 64% owned. Mike Fiers, Chichi Gonzalez. He was a guy that I dropped this weekend in a couple of leagues.
Match. Should have never owned him.
Oh, no, I got some good stuff out of Chichi Gonzalez.
I understand. You got lucky.
No regrets. Matt Shoemaker, Jesse Hahn, Chris Young, Mark Burley, Chase Anderson, and Vince Velasquez. Favorite two or three?
Fiers and Shoemaker for me.
And I'll throw Hahn in there.
Yeah, kind of he would be third.
Well, how can I leave Chris Young out? All right, I got to... Because you said two or three. I got to take somebody out. All right, sorry, Jesse Hahn. You're steady. You're wonderful, but I got to put Chris Young in there.
It's not the most exciting group. That's for sure. Fringy
well,
starting
pitchers. Fringy starting pitchers part two.
Yeah,
you're not even like the marquee among the fringy guys.
Well,
that's
sometimes.
Kind of what you expect.
Part three might be better than part two, but you never know. Actually, Brett Anderson's in here. I kind of like Brett Anderson. Charlie Morton. Nate Eovaldi, Chris Tillman, Brett Anderson, Jay Happ, Tommy Malone, Kyle Gibson, Trevor May. Oh, a bunch of twins. Malone, Gibson, May. Morton, Eovaldi, Tillman, Anderson, Happ, Malone, Gibson, May.
I hear what you're saying on Brett Anderson. He did have 10 strikeouts this last game, but otherwise, yeah, not a big strikeout pitcher, but 2.47 ERA in his last 11 starts for one of the best hitting teams in baseball. That seems like a guy who deserves a little more love. And obviously he has a track record. It was several years ago because of all the injuries, but he used to be considered a highly regarded fantasy pitcher and still only 27 years old.
Yeah, I think like people do forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say he and Morton are probably my favorites out of this group.
Yeah, I think at this point it can't be too picky with strikeouts because the guys who get strikeouts are owned.
Yeah, so, no, I understand.
Yeah, I wasn't.
But at the same time, strikeouts is actually something of a predictor stat, unlike win-loss record.
Yeah.
And speaking of win-loss record, I'm noticing now Brett Anderson's is only 4-4. Meanwhile, Clayton Kershaw's is 5-6, and Zach Greinke with his like 150 ERA. His win-loss record is 6-2, so he's on like a 13-win pace. Like, who's winning all the games for the Dodgers? They're a first-place team, and their three best pitchers have a combined 15 wins. That's really weird.
That is weird. That's a good point. We're gonna look it up.
So they're all going to get better, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, Greinke finally got a win last night.
Yeah, I mean, Greinke's obviously going to regress in terms of ERA, but he's so behind what you'd expect his win pace to be that when he does regress, he may just make up for it in the other area and you don't even notice.
And let's not overlook Trevor May. That was just an awful start by him. But the four starts in June prior to that, 24 Ks and 24 innings and a 1.88 ERA. So I'm willing to give him a pass.
In deep leagues, any of these guys interest you? Chad Bettis, Robbie Ray, Wade Miley, Justin Masterson, Michael Lorenzen.
I'm telling you, there's more of this Robbie Ray guy than his minor league numbers.
Uh-huh.
His walk rate was horrendous down there, but it's not up here, and he throws hard for a left-hander. I'm not attaching my name to him, giving him my stamp of approval like I am Matt Boyd, but I think there are some similarities in terms of just left-handers who throw hard and are getting overlooked in fantasy.
Out of this group, first of all, I think, you know, Masterson, maybe he can pull it together because it's not that long ago that he was good. I like Chad Bettis. I wish he pitched for a different team because I'm kind of impressed by what he's done so far.
Here are your wins leaders for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Greinke with 6, Kershaw, Carlos Frias tied with 5, and Anderson and Bolsinger have 4. And then you've got some relievers with 3 and 2 and 1, etc.
Yeah, I figured there had to be some like 7-1 reliever or something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah. That answer was a lot less interesting than I thought it was. I don't really understand it. Maybe they're not really in first. It's all an illusion. Brad Boxberger, is he the closer for the Rays?
Looks like it.
And that's...
how many times have we said that before?
Right.
Pretty much all I got for that. So that means we can read some emails and talk DFS. Oh, we flew through things today. Excellent. I can't believe the impact that minor leaguers have made. I'm just kind of thinking about who I've been adding and dropping recently and who we need to talk about, and it just seems like it's always minor leaguers. I forgot to mention this guy, but another guy I added was Miguel Sano in one league, and those are the guys who are really having a big impact, whether it's a guy like Odor who's already been up or all the dudes on the Astros or all the pitchers in the Mets rotation. You know, it's fun stuff right now. Good influx of young talents.
Stashing Carlos Correa, I think, was probably the best decision I've made this year.
I can't believe how good he's been.
And yeah, but you could say that about a lot of rookies. And they're not all going to deliver right away. Not all of them have. I mean, Vincent Velasquez hasn't. Gallo... I don't know. He's delivered something enough that he's worth owning, but he's been kind of disappointing recently.
Okay. Let's go to the emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Brent, dear Mazzilli, Perlazzo, and Tremblay.
Those are former Orioles managers.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. Pick 2 of 4 to start this week. Steven Matz, Steven Strasburg, AJ Burnett, or Jake McGee?
Oh, we didn't even talk about Strasburg.
Nah.
Yeah, boring. Well, okay, no, he obviously looks awesome.
Yeah.
His two starts were against the Braves without Freeman and the Phillies, who were terrible. So does that dampen things at all for you with Strasburg?
I mean, I guess a little bit, but at the same time, I wasn't trusting the Strasburg we saw before he went on the DL to perform against those lineups.
That's exactly what I was going to say, so I'm really encouraged. I would go... Matz and Strasburg.
And guess what? He does get to face the Phillies more this year, and the Mets don't hit very well, and even with Freeman, the Braves aren't exactly a great lineup. So
there you go.
Things look good. Oh, and the Marlins.
Yeah.
He's so bad at Miami, right? Strasburg, every time he pitches at Miami, I wonder if that's going to be the case this year.
How have the Nationals not won like 70 games?
They're
incredible.
Totally going to run away with the division now. From Evaristo. He is from Chi-Town. I never know how to say that. Which of the two players would you guys pick to replace Dustin Pedroia, Daniel Murphy or Devin Travis?
Travis.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I agree, Travis.
Iron Mike from Holmdel, New Jersey. This is my 3rd year playing fantasy baseball, 2nd year listening to your podcast. I would consider my 1st year a success since I made the playoffs. I missed the playoffs last year. I'm currently sitting on a 3-9 record, but I've scored the 3rd most points, and I have the most points scored against in my head-to-head points league. Is there any way to turn around my season, or is this just extremely bad luck? I would hate to have to start listening to a different podcast for fantasy advice.
Bad luck.
There's nothing you can do about points against. We can't help you with that.
No, we can't. And a lot of times it does turn around. I'm one of the 6-6 teams in the podcast league.
Like all three of us are, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm on a stupid 3-game losing streak.
I was shocked to find I'm the highest scoring team in the league. Because it's been, you know, just a couple weeks ago I was 4-6, and I assume I was at least one of the highest scoring teams then. And I haven't made any moves to correct it. It seems to be correcting itself. So a lot of times you can overreact. I understand 3-9 is an even worse predicament, and maybe
trade Stanton.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, because I'm kind of contradicting myself in the same piece of advice, but I'm kind of speaking to the general audience in terms of don't panic if your point total's high, but at the same time 3-9 is so far out of it that,
yeah, but there's nothing he can do. He's just been unlucky. Third most points and most points scored against 3-9. That's just unlucky.
Well, without knowing the players on his team,
exactly.
I
was just
going
to ask Iron Mike to send us some player dilemmas on his roster, because, yeah, you know, I think what Scott's struggling with is, you know, there is an argument to be made when you're scoring a lot of points to stick with what's been working as far as that goes, but there is something you can do.
Yeah. Next we have John. Says,
are we in good shape as far as the recording of the podcast?
I don't know what just happened.
Just had a power surge.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Well, it was captured on the podcast.
Awesome.
Sounded like Scott punched down in the face. Or at least
well,
in the
that
microphone.
That happened too.
Yeah.
Coincidentally at the same time.
Or maybe it was just an alien noise.
Ow.
All right, here's the question from John. Steven Matz, he has now Bauer, Kluber, Salazar, Matz, and Syndergaard. Is that a bad thing to have five pitchers from two teams?
Not from those rotations.
Yeah.
No.
Dan from Boston, 10-team head-to-head categories league. I'm in first place. What are your thoughts on trading for Stanton? Give up Nolan Arenado, get Matt Carpenter, Jake Arrieta, and Stanton. He's in first place.
Oh, that is a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, the upgraded pitching.
Yeah.
Just adding Arrieta to your pitching staff is going to probably make up the point difference while you're waiting for Stanton to return. And then when Stanton returns, he's even better than Arenado, I would say.
Grade this trade from Julian in Los Angeles. 12-team head-to-head points league. Give up Dallas Keuchel and Jimmy Paredes. Get Tyson Ross and Yasmani Tomas. Give up Keuchel and Paredes for Ross and Tomas.
Hate to say it, but that's like a D.
Yeah, I was going to say D+.
And James in Atlanta. I am the commissioner of a 12-team head-to-head categories league. We have two catcher slots on our roster. One of the guys in our league missed out on good catchers in the draft, so he decided not to have any catchers on his roster because the guys on the wire would kill his ratios. He has instead decided to carry two extra pitchers, which improves his counting categories. Some of the other guys in the league are complaining that this owner should have to field a complete lineup. What do you think?
I agree.
I've never played in a league in any sport where you don't have to field a complete lineup. Of course he should have to have two catchers on his team. Of course! It's not really a two-catcher league if you don't have to have two catchers. It's ridiculous.
Change your league settings
right now, guy.
I've played in leagues where you don't have to have a full lineup.
Well, you shouldn't have. They were dumb, Scott.
Well, no. Because the theory is you're only hurting yourself if you don't. I mean, I understand in this specific case with the catcher, in a two-catcher league, the catchers available might be so bad that you don't really miss what they're giving you. But I kind of like the idea of passing on something, giving up, forfeiting something in the short term for the sake of the long term, where you want to stash an extra guy on your bench, so you're going to take this gamble of not starting a fifth pitcher or whatever the case may be. So I don't think CBSSports.com really allows it anymore. They used to allow it, but there was a change in the commissioner settings a couple years ago that made it hard to do, so I'm not sure what site he's playing on, but I don't have a fundamental problem with it, no.
I mean, I guess if it sounds like it's within the rules.
Yeah.
So I think on that basis, you can't have a problem with it. I just, you know, would think that that's just not a good rule. And, you know, you could still do something similar where if you were forced to have two catchers, that, you know, put two inactive catchers in there.
When I've used it, it's more often been in football, actually. I punted on tight end, like the occasional week.
Oh, gosh.
Because there wasn't a guy I wanted to drop on my roster, but in my tight end stunk, and I was only going to get like 2 or 3 points from him anyway, probably. So I just said, I'll go without a tight end this week.
Yeah, well, I don't like it. I've made that clear. And now I got to tell you, the first 55 minutes of this podcast have meant nothing to me because I've been so excited to talk about FanDuel. So I hope
and
you
now
guys
we get to do it.
I hope you guys are excited too. Oh, I can be talked out of Lance McCullers, but it is a tough, tough night for pitchers. So, Al, blow me away with your two cool starting pitchers that aren't Lance McCullers.
Yeah. You're probably not going to be blown away because they're not that exciting, but they're the ones I like the best.
No exciting pitchers today.
No. Jimmy Nelson's my favorite at Philadelphia, $7,200. The matchup certainly helps him separate from the rest of the field, but as I'm sure I've said many times before, he's just really good against righties, and you know, the Phillies just don't have lefties in their lineup that scare me. So I think he's going to have a very good night, just like his last start, which was against the Twins, if I recall. Was that right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
The Mets.
Okay, even better.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But a very close second would be Nathan Carnes against the Indians.
Yeah, I thought about
Nathan
him.
Nathan Carnes, a very close second.
Yeah.
Now that's where we are today.
Yeah, that's the opposite scenario where Carnes has had reverse splits over his major league career and most of his minor league career, and the Indians are very lefty heavy.
Al, guess what?
What?
I set my lineup earlier today. I had exactly $500 left over. Jimmy Nelson is $500 more expensive than Lance McCullers. And now I have $0 left over because I just made the switch.
Oh, you talked him out of it.
Well, you talked me into Jimmy Nelson, not out of Lance McCullers.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
You better do well, Jimmy Nelson.
One guy Al didn't mention who I like today is CJ Wilson at home against the Yankees. The Yankees are another left-handed heavy lineup. And I remember noting when Dallas Keuchel shut them down on Thursday. I should have known better than to not start Keuchel because it seems like they should struggle against lefties.
They're not bad against lefties, though.
I was going to say they're very good against lefties.
I know. They haven't been bad, but it seems like they should be.
They really roughed up Wilson last time he faced them earlier this year. It was in Yankee Stadium, but they did get to him. But I felt the same way. I kind of feel like they're a little vulnerable right now, and I think the biggest reason why is Mark Teixeira is cold. So, you know, that's a big run producer for them. I think that you could pitch very well. The Astros pitched very well against the Yankees this week, except for Brett Oberholzer. So it wouldn't surprise me, Scott. It wouldn't surprise me. I got a lot of hitting stuff for you.
All right.
Great stuff. All right, left-handed Rangers against Bud Norris could be good for you. Right-handed Angels against Cece Sabathia. Righties hit .339, .374, .580. So Mike Trout is expensive, but the good news is you're probably not going to spend a lot on a starting pitcher tonight. So you can get. Yeah.
$8,600 is the most expensive.
You can get Mike Trout in your lineup. He's $5,000. He's 4-for-11 with a home run off Sabathia. If you want to go cheap at first base, there are some good options. Maybe you go lefty Ryan Howard against Jimmy Nelson. I like David Ortiz, who's 9-for-25 with 3 home runs against R.A. Dickey, and he has 3 homers in his last 7 games. I think the Red Sox could have a big game against Dickey. Dickey's faced them, I think, 3 times this year. He has not been good. Pablo Sandoval, 21st most expensive third baseman, 7-for-22 in his career with a home run and 3 doubles off R.A. Dickey. I love left-handed Brewers against Sean O'Sullivan. Lefties have an OPS over 1,000 against O'Sullivan this year. Carlos Gomez is in my lineup. He's the 8th most expensive outfielder, but in his last 3 seasons, he has an OPS over 1,300 in 36 at-bats at Citizens Bank Ballpark. So I think this is a great ballpark and a great matchup for Gomez. You could also go with Adam Lind. I like Russell Martin. He's 6-for-19 with 4 home runs against Clay Buchholz. And Buchholz hasn't been great against the Blue Jays. In fact, Buchholz has been really good over his last 9 starts. 3 kind of bad ones, though. 2 of them were against the Blue Jays. So he's the most expensive starting pitcher. You probably want to avoid him. I like Rougned Odor. He's $2,600, and he's facing Bud Norris, and he's left. He's left-handed or a switch hitter? Bottom line, he's going to bat lefty. Odor, yeah. Sorry, Al.
No, I'm sorry.
He's left-handed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I was ahead of you.
So my lineup is Jimmy Nelson, Russell Martin, David Ortiz, Rougned Odor, Manny Machado facing a suddenly struggling, not surprisingly, Wandy Rodriguez, Xander Bogaerts, Carlos Gomez, Mike Trout, and I have Josh Reddick in there right now. Might change that. He's been kind of bad, but they're facing David Hale, who's been awful. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't change that. That's a great matchup.
$2,900 for Josh Reddick. I've said my piece.
What's, let's see, votes price, he is $3,600. It's kind of expensive, but again, could be worth it against David Hale.
Yeah, same price as Martin, so I could make that switch too.
Well, here's the thing. CJ Wilson is the second most expensive pitcher today. I haven't decided if I'm going to go with him or not. But putting him in my lineup, and Trout, and Paul Goldschmidt, and Carlos Correa, and Stephen Vogt, I still have enough money left to fill out the other four spots, barely. I think because there's not a lot of pitchers that you should clearly avoid today, so there's not a lot of hitters you can eliminate from consideration, or that anybody who's playing is going to eliminate from consideration, you kind of want to go studs, duds, or stars, grubs. However you put it today.
Well, yeah, a couple of the duds I like, Scott, are Rougned Odor and Xander Bogaerts.
There you go.
They're $2,600 apiece.
Because who's Rougned Odor facing?
Bud Norris, who's been bad against lefties.
All right, yeah, no, that's a good one.
And he's just been playing well, you know. He's hitting well, and the Rangers are a good lineup, so I have a feeling he'll lead off or hit toward the top of the order.
You can't do him with those four hitters I mentioned, Goldschmidt, Trout, Correa, and Vogt. You have to kind of go all $2,200 players if you do that.
Okay.
Or you could just make a change at starting pitcher and start Jimmy Nelson instead of CJ Wilson.
I think the Diamondbacks might have a big game against Bolsinger because this is the second time they're facing him. And what we've seen so far is that the second time around, opponents have really gotten to Mike Bolsinger. So that is something to keep in mind. There was a $2,200 outfielder that I liked, but maybe not. Sorry. I think I'm wrong about that. Yeah. I'm wrong about that. I'm scanning, and I'm still wrong about that. Okay. I'm done speaking today. So unless you guys have anything else to contribute, we can end the show.
Let's put a bow on this.
Oh, Andre Ethier. Maybe. $2,200.
Ethier's down to 2,200, huh?
Yeah. Who's pitching for Arizona tonight?
Nobody good.
It is Alan Webster. So
like
Ethier at Arizona against Alan Webster. I think that could be a good one.
Start Ethier.
Whew. That's it for me and Al and Scott. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you.
Bye.